Hi, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and you're on The Front Porch. I'm joined, as usual, by Rick Wilson of the American Friends Service Committee, and he's also a columnist for the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And Lori Lynn of the Charleston Daily Mail editorial page. Hey.
Hi, Scott.
And it's been a while since the three of us have been in the same place at the same time. And so to celebrate, I thought we would pick a topic that's so uplifting, and that would be the economic collapse of our state. It's been a pretty depressing week to be in West Virginia. There have been layoff notices for Patriot Coal of up to 2,000 possible job losses in Kanawha and Boone County. The governor has announced a mid-year across-the-board 4% cut to state government agencies, including, I should disclose, West Virginia Public Broadcasting. It just seems like a really hard time to be a West Virginian. Highest unemployment rate in the nation. Shall we go on? Do you think that our political leaders are reacting and leading us through this? Lori, what do you think?
I think my answer to that generally would be yes. And I would look at what Governor Tomlin said when he announced the cuts, which was this is largely due to forces that are beyond our control, namely the dramatic drop in the severance tax, which is the tax on natural resources. And that's driven largely by two things. First, the price of natural gas, which is very low. And when the price is low, then we're not collecting as much tax. And then secondly, obviously, the decline of coal. They're just not taking as much coal out of the ground. And when they're not taking it out, we're not getting the tax. So
you're saying that the governor's being responsible by being proactive, cutting the budget before things get out of control.
Sure. And, you know, Governor Tomlin does not set the national price for natural gas, right? Nor does the legislature. That is absolutely, literally beyond our control here. And as far as the coal situation goes, you know, again, that's largely a consequence of federal regulatory decisions and market conditions, which are in turn driven by federal regulatory decisions. So,
Rick, what do you think? Have our politicians responded appropriately to what's going on here?
I'm thinking about that one, Scott. I mean, I think this was obviously not something that Governor Tomlin undertook lightly to do. But I think there have been voices in the state that have been predicting a decline in coal for some time. And I think our state leaders have been many of them have been in a state of denial for years. And there's sort of this idea that if we just hang on, it's all going to bounce back and we're going to go back to, you know, very high employment in certain industries. And I don't think that's probably going to happen. If you look at the historic trends, I mean, from 120-some thousand after World War II, that's when the decline began. I mean, I'm someone who's lived here my whole life. One thing I can say is luckily, so far, we're not at the trough we hit in the early 1980s when for a year, one whole year, we had a 17% official unemployment record. I mean, it was horrendous. It was a horrible time. It's hard times now, and I know it can get worse.
So it's not as bad as it was in the 80s. Because you have to go back to the 80s, I think, to get anything even close to what's happening now. You know, another analogy to the 80s? The rest of the country was doing, especially in the mid-80s, late-80s, was doing relatively well, was rebounding, but West Virginia was still in the depths of its crisis.
We kept double-digit unemployment on an annual basis, you know, well, throughout the 80s and kind of into the 90s, too. It was a really and I'm not minimizing the trouble now. It's just West Virginia is no stranger to hard times.
Well, what's been happening lately, I think, is that, you know, coal was declining, but natural gas was doing so well that was masking it, at least as far as the budget goes. You know, obviously, if you're an individual coal miner, it's not. But with the severance tax, the natural gas boom was going, you know, gangbusters. And then other places started to mine natural gas. The Clean Power Plan came out, and that actually did not treat natural gas nearly as well as people had expected. And so, you know, the price for that went down as well. And so now you kind of have a problem with both resources. I mean, we can't rely on the natural gas boom anymore.
So we've diagnosed the problem. I will posit that I've been wishing for someone like an FDR or a Ronald Reagan, a sort of inspirational figure to emerge in the state and to sort of rhetorically take us all by the hand, bring us together and say, this is bad, this is awful, there's a lot of pain going on, but we'll get through it together. And I'm not seeing it. I'm seeing, you know, either good caretaking of the state government budget, like dealing with the fact that, okay, there's less money, we have to be responsible, which I admit is good compared to the 80s. Mm-hmm. We are being much more responsible, and that is not something to be laughed at. And I'm also seeing a lot of blame going on, and some of it probably rightfully so, of the Obama administration for causing this problem.
Well, I mean, when in the history of the world that we know of as an economy based on natural resource extraction ended terribly well? And also think now we're having the consequences of roads not taken in West Virginia. Again, the decision back, you know, nearly 10 years ago that we were going to undertake major cuts in the state tax revenue has not really led away to prosperity. I mean, this isn't the first year there have been tax cuts, and that was even – but there have been revenue cuts and budget cuts, and that was even before coal began to tank. So that was one decision made. And the other is, you know, think how differently West Virginia would look if years ago we would have created a trust fund, a sovereign wealth fund, a future fund from our natural resources extraction, so there would have been a permanent source of wealth to cushion and to help transitions like this.
Or just use the tax money to effectively build up our education system and make it one of the better ones in the country. You know, if we'd done that for the last 80 years, where would we be?
Yeah, I mean, Rick, you were talking about when has an economy like this ever ended well. I mean, I think Alaska they're doing pretty well, but they do have their trust fund, which is just, you know, mind-bogglingly huge.
It's as big as our general fund. So, you know, like 40 years ago, a couple of years ago, it was like 40, $4 billion. I mean, it's like $40 billion, I think. It's like 10 times our general revenue fund.
You know, but even – so we're talking about state coffers again, and I think that's a piece of it. But even Alaska, so if natural resources aren't going to be their future either, and I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah,
but
I don't know that that's true.
I think they're just waiting
at least in the next 100 years.
They're waiting for the rebound of the gas oil industry. But we're going to have to figure out something else for people to be and do.
Yeah, and that's really the forward-looking question that you're asking. I mean, people are so good here about talking about, you know, transitioning to a new economy and technology jobs. But I think people like us have a responsibility to really press people who say that specifically. What are you talking about? What exact kind of company are you going to bring here?
Or grow from people who live here.
Right. Given our challenges, you know, as far as topography and our workforce challenges, I mean, I think, you know, the Eastern Panhandle is something to look at, you know, the PNG plant. But, you know, on the other hand, the Eastern Panhandle is very different from the southern part of the state.
I mean, you look at I just got back from a couple trips to Pittsburgh for business. And, you know, Pittsburgh was hit by the declines in the coal and the steel industry in the 80s. And yet, because they had invested that money in institutions like Carnegie Mellon, that's the one that comes to mind. Now they have a booming tech industry there in Pittsburgh. Who would have thought? Right. Pittsburgh, which is culturally not that different from Wheeling and Morgantown, but they had a concentration of resources that lasted beyond those steel jobs and allowed them to be able to recast themselves as a place for robotic tech and for biotechnology and banking, the other things that they've done to reinvent their city. Is that a possible model for us? Do we have it in us to try to do what cities like that have done?
There's a part of me that agrees that you can't. I mean, I agree you cannot plan an economy into the future. I mean, really, you don't know what's going to work or what industries are going to take off. I mean, that's I'm with Hayek on that one, that there's not enough, you know, or a group of people in a room can't envision that far out. But I think we can do the things that would help an economy take off. And that is, again, having a really good infrastructure, having broadband, trying to raise our educational attainment level, which really drags us down. And it would be good if we had a policy this is an aspirational goal. We want to live in a state that doesn't waste people's time, their money, or their lives, you know, and we stop this throwaway culture, which also includes people whose lives are being thrown away through substance abuse and over-incarceration and things like that. I mean, I think there are certain things you can do to help position the state to make it more resilient.
How in the world, I mean, I'm going to call you on that. How in the world do we invest in any of this? I mean.
Well, the broadband bill, you know, what do we think of the broadband bill?
Where's the money going to come from?
It's not. I mean, it's expensive. It's not billions and billions of dollars, right? The plan, I think this is Senator Walter's plan, is to kind of lay a backbone and then have, you know, the private companies do the last mile to people's houses. There's probably something to that. I mean, I think my view on that is colored by the fact that, you know, my parents live 70 miles from the nation's capital in Virginia. They don't have broadband. So I don't know that we need to have it in every nook and cranny of the state, but we could certainly have a better infrastructure as far as that than we do now.
I'm sorry to be so negative and questioning on that. It just seems to me like, yes, it would be wonderful if we improved the educational attainment of our state.
Right, that's so much easier said than done.
I mean, especially when you're in the situation where they just cut a higher education for 3 years in a row. They just cut K-12 by 1% in mid-year. I mean, we're the Educational Broadcasting Authority, and I was talking to you guys about this. You know, we've had our budget cut by more than $1 million over the last couple of years, and our staff have really stepped up. We've raised some more money and, you know, we're doing okay. I'm not complaining except to say that if you keep, you know, if there's less money to invest in education, then how do you invest in education?
But why is there less money to invest in education? It's because of sunspots, because years ago they made a decision to cut millions of dollars out of the state budget. I mean, is it a surprise when you take gas out of your car that you can't drive as far? Because to me, that's sort of common sense.
But it's a chicken and egg question, Rick. It's like a lot of the cuts that they made were just to bring our state in line with our competing states that surround us. You know, they didn't give away the store. They basically just brought down our business taxes to be even just relatively close to Virginia and Pennsylvania and Ohio. I could see the argument. I mean, their argument would be the reason we don't have more business here to create the taxes is because we overtaxed them and they all ran away.
Well, it's also a small part of the cost of doing business. By the way, biblical quote, you know, what can we do? What can't we do? Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So this state has not even looked at increasing, say, the tax on tobacco for more than 10 years. We do one thing we could do right now is, I think, and there will probably be disagreement on this, if you increase some of the severance tax on gas and then give credits for companies to actually process and do something with the gas here, or if you do what Louisiana does and put a transfer tax, if you're going to produce gas here and take it out. And again, it's political will. Yeah, they made cuts, you know, in 2007 that were more than enough to pay for free college tuition at every state for everyone who's going to college in state right now. It's just, what choices do you make? You know, that's what economists call opportunity costs.
I will note that they are not, the cuts are not affecting financial aid at higher education. I think that's one area that's exempt. What some states do with the severance tax is when prices are high, they increase the tax. When prices are low, then it's lower. What you want to do is keep people taking it out of the ground. You never want the profit to be so low that it's worth just laying people off or worth not drilling new wells. So that, you know, that's something I could get behind. I certainly don't think you want to increase it now. You know, people are talking about increasing the severance tax to 10 or 15%. I mean, it's now the price is so low that you're getting to the point where people will just stop producing it. And, you know, the tax on zero is zero. No, I think the question really, you know, the immediate question is, how do you replace the revenue that is being lost from the severance tax? You know, do you raise property taxes? I think we talked here about the food tax at one point. That's gone. That cost a lot of money.
So that we have enough money in state government to make these investments that people tend to agree are important in infrastructure and education and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and you know, as far as the point you were making, Scott, about the businesses. I mean, I think conservatives and liberals, you know, they both kind of oversell it. It's not the case that a business only considers its tax rate. There are many, many things that go into a decision on where to locate. But it just, you know, it defies belief that it doesn't matter at all. It has to matter some at the margins, and the margins is, you know, where people make their decisions. And so I think, you know.
It might have been a PR thing. And maybe, and we could argue whether in actuality how much of an impact it was. But the PR on the state was essentially, this is a bad place to do business. It has higher business taxes, and that was true. It has a horrible, you know, workers' comp rate, and that was true. At the time, actually, it's gone down. And now, at least those talking points have been, you know, put aside.
For one thing, when you have groups putting millions of dollars into ramping up the noise machine and creating a narrative, and then you pass policies to do the narrative, and then they dial down the rhetoric, is that a surprise either?
That's always really confused me. You know, people say about with the legal reform, oh, you know, there's really nothing to that. It's just these outside groups. You know, why, if there's really nothing to it, why are these groups targeting little old West Virginia? You know, why don't they go to Pennsylvania or New York and try to, you know, attack those legal systems? There has to be something to it.
I'll put forth an alternative narrative to Rick's Vermont-like version of West Virginia and how we could be. I mean, maybe we can't become a well-educated, healthy workforce. Maybe what we need to be is the cheapest, easiest, least regulated place in the nation to do business.
Well, you should be happy, Scott, because we're sliding that way. The other thing that's interesting is what's going to happen to the whole tax reform group that's been meeting in the legislature. Do you think are they going to push for major cuts like they want to and corporate taxes?
You're already hearing them say that this is not the year for either new spending or new tax cuts. And I think, you tell me, Lori, but I think the people in charge now are not such ideologues that they're going to just push forward regardless of the budget. I think this puts a kibosh on most of their plans.
Yeah, anything I think would almost have to be revenue neutral or almost revenue neutral, and you know the political choices that would take are, I just think they're pretty much out of the question now. It's been interesting. I think we've learned a lot, but I just don't think this is going to be the year.
Let me just circle back. When I talked about how bad things were in the past, I'm not minimizing how bad things are now, but I think the big narrative is people here have a remarkable degree of resiliency, and there are people here who are working on quality of life and trying to make it a better place every day, and they're trying to hang on to what they can. So I wouldn't write us off just yet.
I wouldn't either.
And we have, you know, next year we will elect a new governor, we'll elect a new president. I mean, these are definitely, the leadership everywhere is going to be changing, and we'll continue to be having this conversation.
Yes or no, Lori, should state leaders, including Republicans in particular, should they be accepting the money that's being put forth with the Clean Power Plan Plus, or whatever that's called, the Obama administration's proposal to fund money for reclamation and job training and other things here in the coal fields?
Yes.
So what's going on politically that's stopping us from being – stopping our delegation?
Well, I think there's just, you know, and I don't know all the ins and outs of it, but, you know, there's a reluctance to accept the Clean Power Plan. And so if, you know, if that is somehow legally tied with accepting it or, you know, symbolically, I mean, I understand the reluctance. They're fighting it in court. They're hoping that they will elect a president that will halt it. I mean, I think the Clean Power Plan is not – carved in stone yet, and so to the extent that it's tied up in resisting that, that's fine. But you know, when you're, if they're offering that kind of money, I don't see a great reason other than what I just said to not accept it.
I mean, I think you're playing at high risk because you're assuming that that's the only thing that's really driving our problems right now. And I think Lori and I kind of agree that it's overdetermined, that there are other factors besides regulatory things that are affecting the coal fields as well. The fact that it doesn't grow back when you take it out might have something to do with that too. So, I mean, they're playing it's a political game. I can see why they might derive short-term advantage from it, but I'm not sure how long it's going to work very well.
So, before we leave today, what is one thing that you've seen going on in this state that gives you hope that we are resilient, that we're going to bounce back from this, and we're all going to figure this out, and it's all going to be okay? And I will start by talking about Wheeling, because I spent some time in Wheeling. I reported on it. They had a plan once to try to turn all of downtown into a huge outlet mall. which failed. It was pretty expensive. and I'm not sure if that would have worked or not. And the place, when I went there in the mid 2000s or whatever, it really was just looked like a bomb had hit it. You go to Wheeling now and there's so many cool things going on. They have urban farming all over the place. We're working with this one young woman who's trying to start a children's museum out of an old church, and she's gotten a lot of money together. I think she's going to make it happen. A lot of people are rehabbing the buildings, and the buildings are so beautiful. They're taking this ruin and they're rebuilding it, and they're making something new out of it. It will not be the city it was when Wheeling Steel was big. It's not going to be that city. But they're figuring out what a new thing could be that would be equally exciting. So, Wheeling, what positive thing can you think of that might say that we're not done for yet?
Well, the obvious one, and this would be cherry picking, would be the whole New River area, which is, you know, really become a gem to a lot of people all around the country. But I want to pick a harder one too, Huntington. Like in the 80s, Huntington, holy tsunami, Batman, steel, textiles, everything going down. It was horrible. People used to joke they should change the town slogan, the last one out, turn out the lights. You know, and partly Huntington is working and dealing with a lot of things, including drug problems and health things, but it's really working. And also, I think that shows, and so does the Morgantown area, the public-private partnerships, the fact that Marshall University is there helps other businesses get going. The fact there are public institutions and investments helps other things go. The same way that Morgantown was pretty resilient because you have the education.
Cabell County, Huntington's County, Cabell County is one of the few counties that's growing. And it and Putnam County, the only counties in southern West Virginia that are growing.
Cabell's growing now?
Cabell's slightly, yes. And so it's knocked the trend. So something's going on right. How about you, Lori?
Well, I'm going to be just horrendously partisan and say the takeover by the Republicans of the legislature is what gives me the most hope. I mean, there are things now that can be discussed on a state level that haven't been able to be discussed for several decades. You know, I think legal reform was big. I think we are only beginning to see the dividends that will pay. And, you know, so again, sorry to be a terrible political hack here, but that's what gives me the most hope.
Rick, do you want to amend your statement?
No, I'll let it ride.
On that note, that's The Front Porch. I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, joined by Rick Wilson and Lori Lind. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks.
It's not all bad.